ladies and gentlemen. Wednesday, June 1st, House Water Committee come to order.
Excuse me.
Chair gets too sneezy. Got something in the throat.
Is that, are you allergic to cookies, Mr. Chair?
Too much. We're going to start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3104. And I believe I have Representative Boquist in the audience, and if you would, Mr. Boquist, Representative, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Representative Brian Boquist. I represent the 23rd House District, which has portions of five rural counties. Several of those counties, of course, border the Willamette River. As a background, Mr. Chair, to House Bill 3104, in the 1999 session, you may recall, and Representative Crummell may recall, you voted on and was passed out of this House and the Senate and signed by the Governor, House Bill 2626. That bill was the precursor bill to, and one of the options, to 3104. That was carried by then Representative Lane Shutterly, of course, who's from my district, in cooperation with all of our surrounding representatives. What we were attempting to do was improve the access, the marine access, i.e. gravel management or selective dredging of sandbars and gravel areas along a stretch of about 70-some miles of the Willamette River. Interestingly enough, that was 1999, and since then, Mr. Chair, I have a whole stack of studies that have been carried on by various agencies of government in the state about this issue. And ironically, today, less than, I guess, 1 hour ago, we passed the Marine Board budget for the state of Oregon, which part of that is Package 300, which is enhanced the Willamette River access with modifications. What the project that we've been trying to put together for the last 6 years involves a whole host of individuals, to include Representative Thatcher, Representative Olson at the opposite end, Representative Berger, Representative Dalto, Mr. Chair, which I believe you received a letter from before on this issue. What we're specifically asking today under 3104 is to provide a tool in the toolbox for us over the next 2 years of continuing to try and put this project together. The entire project that has been, I think Commissioner Mike Probst from Polk County has been heading it up for the various counties, we'll lay out in later testimony. It in its whole would involve federal government funding, ideally, and we represent Krupp has been working with the Watershed Enhancement Board on salmon areas. In addition to that, we've got some private sector individuals involved in trying to come up with an economical way, again, to address the access on the Willamette River. Today, even after all of the rains, many boats can't travel the distance of those districts I just mentioned, basically down from Representative Crummell's area all the way up through Harrisburg, because the water is too shallow, and it creates a danger to the boats and things like that. What, again, 3104 specifically does, in earlier discussions this year with the Parks Department, and Tim Wood, the Parks Director, is here, we discussed the ability to apply for a grant proposal or receive lottery funds from the Parks Department as part of the competitive grant process. In doing that, it came out of that discussion that it may not be appropriate, or they weren't sure it was appropriate that that could be done. So what we've done is taken House Bill 3104 with the -1 amendment, Mr. Chair, and tried to craft the existing bill we had in a manner.
Excuse me, Representative. You said that is the Parks Department, were not sure.
Correct.
That it could be done. Did they offer any reasons for their uncertainty?
Their reasons, Mr. Chair, for the uncertainty was whether they had the statutory authority and whether this project would enhance recreation or parks in an appropriate level that they could participate. And again, Mr. Chair, what we're attempting to do is get 35% federal money, which when you start cutting down the slices of the toolbox, if Parks was clearly, not directed, but clearly advised that they could participate if we met all of the other requirements, their percentage and their percentage to the recreation, the access to some 47 public parks and accessways, we think would meet that intent. So again, Mr. Chair, what we're trying to do with the bill is to give them a permissive authority. It doesn't say they shall. It doesn't say they will. It gives them the permissive authority so that when we file a grant proposal as part of this entire package of the various entities, that they would clearly have the authority to act upon that grant proposal. Now, of course, it would be competed with all of the other council of government, county, city projects that are funded by the lottery.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there, before I go to any questions, colleagues, I would like to welcome Representative Tomei back. It is good to have you back, and it's good to see you looking bright and cheery.
Thank you. It is good to be back. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Representative Boquist? Representative, in the written legislation that we have, in line 15, do you have a copy of the bill there?
Yes, I do.
Line 15 and line 19, you refer to the council. Are you referring to the council of state or council of governments referred to above in sub 2 or? What's the council for me?
That's correct, Mr. If you look in lines 9 and 10, we're talking about the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments. And Polk County, Commissioner Mike Probst, has pretty much headed up this effort since 1999, and he's here to testify today, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I thought that's what it was, but I wanted to make sure of that. And when you were talking with the Parks Department representative, was this the Parks Commission we were dealing with, or was it the agency head of the department or some surrogate for that?
Mr. Chair, to answer your question, it was meeting with the director, which is Tim Wood, who is here to testify on this bill. He has some concerns, and I'm willing to address the concerns that he has, and I think he can speak for himself on those issues, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anything else, then?
No, Mr. Chair, and if the good graces of the committee decided to pass this, I'd be delighted to carry it on the floor for you and make my own argument.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This we have Mike, is it Probst? Is that correct pronunciation?
Yes, it is.
And I do have handouts for the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Just what you want this late in the session, isn't it?
Oh, we love paper. Paper industry is a big industry in Oregon, and the Oregon legislature helps.
Although, Mr. Chair, because of the bill we passed in 1999, by the end of, I believe it's next year, we are supposed to cut our paper usage by 20%.
That would be a miracle.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, it will be a miracle.
And were you aware of the Dalto Paperwork Reduction Act of 2005?
No, I wasn't aware of that, but I'm happy to hear about it.
That's when I collect papers and put them directly into the recycling.
I don't want to get into it.
I have a good one, but I'm going to pass.
Okay.
Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Mike Probst. I'm Polk County Commissioner, and we have been working on this project for quite a few years with a lot of people helping us. As you can see in the bill itself, there's 39 entities actually involved in Council of Governments that's supporting this effort at this time to bring this forward, which is quite a few entities involved along the Willamette River. But this blue document that was handed out, this covers the river miles that we're talking about, and in that are 47 parks on the Willamette River that will be affected. And when we're talking about recreational, these are parks that are now being negatively affected more and more every year by the problem we're having. And I can specifically talk about Polk County and what's going on. I'm real involved with the Polk County Navy, and that's our boats that we patrol the river with. And what's happening in Polk County is that we're in charge of the Marion County side and the Polk County side with our law enforcement and the patrol of the river. And we're spending a big share of our time now towing people off of the sandbars that are building up in the river. And there are less and less people using the river all of the time because they're getting tired of the repair bills on their boats. They're going to other areas. They're leaving the Willamette River. The prop boats have just about quit using the Willamette River completely. They've gone to the jet boats, which the jet boat industry appreciates that. But it's now that the jet boats are ending up on the bars, and those are very expensive boats, what we're seeing is a drop in a lot of our park uses, where we've spent a tremendous amount of dollars, of Marine Board dollars, to build these nice parks so that people can access the river. Well, now they can't use the river. An economic development and economic interests in our river, we believe, is huge for our rural areas. And we have some of the most beautiful parks that are listed in this book that bring people out of the urban areas into the rural areas to use and spend their dollars. But to do that, this river has to be usable for those purposes. And we've got to keep that river passable. Now, a lot of people think of dredging as this huge process of coming in and digging this deep channel river. That's not what we're talking about. This report that I handed out, now this particular one only covers Polk County. We're talking about more than Polk County, but it gives you a real good idea of what we're talking about. And all we're talking about are removing the sandbars and a very minimal channel in areas to clean it up so these recreational boating can continue to use our river and open it back up. There are many places in Polk County I can walk across the river and not get my knees wet. And there's some places I can do it and just barely get my ankles wet. There were pictures of me, myself, in the Willamette River in the Statesman Journal doing that. People have a hard time believing that that can happen in the Willamette River, but that is true, what's going on now with our river. We're losing a tremendous resource. Now, the other issue we're concerned about are our fish runs, because that's another industry that we have in our state. And that's a warm water channel because it's getting so shallow. Okay, so some people think, okay, dredging, you're going to hurt your fish. We believe, by talking to biologists, that you can dredge and do it at the right time of the year and not hurt your fish runs, but actually help your fish runs so you can have a deeper, cooler channel. So when your fish are running, and that's what our study is about, is that design your dredging so when you're dredging, you're doing it in a way that it's not harming your fish runs, because if we're successful on this, this project's going to go on for years in our river, and we want it done in a way that it's not going to damage fish runs. That's why we're working with OWEB. We're going for OWEB grants to enhance fish runs. We're part of the federal study, is, and that's in this book. Also, we're going for environmental dredging. Well, most people don't think of dredging as environmental. We're looking for a way to enhance fish runs with the dredging we're talking about. It's a little different concept than most people think of. That's because we want to do it different. Now, also when you dredge, there is a resource that comes out of the river. There is a gravel resource that comes out. We believe that there's a payback to the state, and we've talked with the resource companies. So once this investment starts and we get it going over a period of years, we think the investment we're asking the state to make will come back to the state in the future, because there's a royalty that comes out of it. There's from 50 to 60 cents per ton in the resource that will come out of the river will come back. So the upfront we're asking the state for now eventually is going to come back, we believe, a lot more than we're asking you to invest up front now. So there, it's an investment now, but in the long term, we're asking you to protect a resource and recreational that we're losing on that river, and there's going to be other resources, and that resource goes back into our schools. So we think it's a win-win that we're asking for.
You finished? Okay. Representative Byron.
Thank you. Mike, I appreciate your bringing this issue before us. I'm looking at a letter written on behalf of the Willamette Queen, in which they talked about the fact that the riverboats used to travel from the falls up to Eugene. And in fact, Eugene was established, I happen to know where it was, because it was expected to be a seaport. Apparently, they didn't know about Oregon Falls when they did that. Was the river dredged in preparation for those trips? Do you know, or was it naturally that way when the riverboat regularly made that trip?
Up until 74. I may have that date wrong. It was in the 70s. It was dredged pretty extensively. We're not talking about that type of dredging anymore. Also, the type of boats that are ran, the riverboat that's ran now doesn't take the type of draft that they used to take.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take that type of dredging. The captain of the riverboat does happen to be here, and
I think I know who it is.
Yeah, he stands out in an audience. And he may be able to address some of those questions better than I can, but there used to be extensive dredging on the Willamette because of the commercial trade that went on. With some of the removal of the bars and stuff, there could be some commercial trade back on the Willamette without going to the extensive dredging that they used to do because of the technology there is today, but not if they close the locks down. We're concerned about that because of what it would affect with things that happen once in a while in our area. But we think that could be a negative effect on the state, even if it doesn't affect our area. That's just an economic concern.
And, Mr. Chair, I have a different
Please,
topic.
Tom.
Thank you. Where is Irish Bend on the map that I'm familiar with? And why are we not talking about going the extra 36 miles to Eugene, to my town?
Yeah. Basically, at this point in time, we hadn't had anyone yet. But if you've got that interest, we're not opposed to that at all. The people that I've been working with hadn't really shown an interest yet in that area, like county commissioners and the people that I deal with. We're not opposed with it. It's just I kind of ran out of time of what I could work on.
Well, you told me who I need to talk to. But give me an idea on the map I'm familiar with where Irish Bend is.
Okay. Irish Bend is south of Corvallis. Trying to think what the best landmark there is.
Long Term River.
Okay, yeah, 6 miles from Harrisburg.
And south of the Long Term.
Yep.
Okay, I know where it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Probst, I just had a question about availability of federal funds. In other words, since the, as you are well aware, the dams that are operated on the Willamette are operated by the Army Corps of Engineers. What's the availability of cost share with the feds?
Okay, if you look toward the back of this book, there are two bills that were passed. And they are specifically for dredging, and they're matching with federal funds. And the Willamette was listed in both of them. And one of them was actually last year. And they are for actually environmental dredging, which is what we want to do, is design this for that type of dredging. And it's a little different idea of the type of dredging that has gone on in the past. And they have been used in Oregon before, and you'll see some letters here from our congressional delegation where they have tied into these in the past. And those are the federal dollars we're talking about. This is not going to be particularly easy, but these are pots of money that have been used in Oregon before. They are still pots of money that are there.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So the federal funding that's outlined in this in the legislation you've listed here, that would be in addition, would this supplant what you're proposing? I'm trying to get a sense of where that fits into the proposal in this bill.
What we're after, the state dollars we're asking for, then we would go back to the feds to try to get the federal dollars, because it's going to take both to do the project.
Okay.
Other question?
Well, on a different note, I guess I was just curious about what, you know, as far as permits involved. And Division of State Lands was here. Does every county, I mean, are you going to get some type of general authorization from Division of State Lands?
Well, you have to have permits both from the federal government and state lands. And the permitting process can take from 2 to 3 years easily.
So you don't have the permits at this point?
No. You're back into the chicken and egg process, because some of the permitting process and the study process, all they say, well, do you have the money to do it? Do you have the permits to do it? So that's what we've been running into for the last 9 years. So we're back here. We keep getting into the catch 22, is when you try to work on the permits, they say, well, do you have the money? And when we've tried to work on the money, they say, do you have the permits? So it's been an interesting process.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. We may have some more questions for you before we're through here today. I assume you'll be staying until we close this hearing. Kim Wood. Is it Tim?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Tim Wood. I'm the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and I would like to offer a few comments with regard to the bill. First of all, my testimony was originally prepared in response to the bill as it is currently written. In that bill, there is no discussion of this being managed as part of the department's grant program. The amendment or proposed amendment, I believe, provides a nexus to Parks and Recreation that didn't exist in the original bill. And as Representative Boquist pointed out, if the bill were to be, I guess, the participation of the Parks Department as a part of through its grant program is what the intention of this bill is, then there could be that nexus for us to participate. There were two issues. One is whether or not it is a Parks and Recreation Department responsibility, and then the other question would be that the funds that were used are lottery funds. Then is that a constitutional use of those funds? And perhaps the attempt to correct that was made by adding in the proposed amendment the terms to improve marine access to 47 public parks, landing and accesses. So that may make the nexus. So I guess as Representative Boquist had testified earlier that if this is a grant program and it's intended for local jurisdictions such as the Council of Governments, the Mid-Valley Council of Governments, various counties, parks and recreation districts to participate in, then it's likely that this project or projects like this could be eligible. The question then is, how competitive are they against all the other projects that are coming forward in that program? And currently in this biennium and proposed in our next biennium's budget, we have a local grants program, which is where this project would be funded. And that local grants program is funded at $8 million. So that would mean all park and recreation programs, projects which come to our department for grants, they all compete against each other on their merit. And as I understand Representative Boquist, that would be the case with these kinds of programs as well.
Questions for the department? In your sign-up, you sign up against. Is that predicated on the bill without the amendments or the bill with the amendments?
Mr. Chair, that was with the bill as it was originally written.
As originally drafted. Okay. Are there other questions, issues?
So, Mr. Chair, you are supporting the bill at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, if this bill were amended or it was clear that the intent of the bill was that participation would be through a grant program, then we could support the bill. But as it is currently written, it's not clear that that's the intent of how the department would participate.
Please. I do have an additional question, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Since since it's actually permitting you to create an agreement with the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments, and then since it also is permissive into letting the council or allowing the council to take care of those activities, why would there need to be a specified grant program as part of this bill when in fact wouldn't it then become the Council of Governments' responsibility to determine where money's going to come from to pay for dredging operations? Or if you've got an entrepreneur out there that says, you know, gee, I can dredge some rock and make some money on the rock? And
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, As the bill, as I understand the bill as it is currently written, it's directing the department or encouraging the department to enter into an agreement to promote dredging as well as setting aside, making available up to $3 million for those purposes. But as I understood what Representative Boquist was testifying to earlier was that what we're really talking about is a competitive grant program, then we have a competitive grant program, and that is our local grants program. And various jurisdictions, the City of Eugene, Dalton Hills Park and Recreation Department, City of Albany, all compete for funds under our local grant program. And if this were managed as a grant program, then projects such as these would compete with all those other jurisdictions and would be included in the $8 million that we have in our budget for specifically for grants. And so there's also a matching fund requirement for this. So participants who would receive a grant, depends on the size of the jurisdiction, but it's either a 60-40 requirement or a 50-50 matching fund requirement. So the point that I'd like to make is that the county or the council would be competing with others for those funds based on the merits of the project.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I can be responsive to that too. Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, back in 1999, when we started down this original footpath that led us to where we are, which was with House Bill 2626. Two things had to happen. One is to ensure that the council and governments had the authority to do this. And in this case, what we're talking about in the bill is they giving them the authority to do it, as Commissioner Probst pointed out, and then clarifying for the Parks and Recreation Department that the council and governments may apply and that they may provide them funds. And it doesn't say shall. And again, it's back to this grant thing is where the Council of Governments then is authorized, and then they can compete with the other agencies that are out there. And so you have two clauses. We're incorporating the House Bill 2626 from 1999 into the ability to go out and request the grant. And we put a ceiling on it because we didn't want anybody uncomfortable with the fact that this was going to go out and eat up his $8 million. And in fact, the initial studies we've had in looking at the cost of this, we're thinking is around $3 million total. Representative Dingfelder raised the issue of cost sharing. We're going to try and find 35% of that cost from the federal government. We are working for the salmonoid funding for small portions of it, and then the cost recovery from the private sector, and trying to get this down to a package where, you know, a grant request once it's put together, and we know we could do this, maybe only like less than $1 million from parks in competing with the others. We would just, of course, assume, in this assumption on our part, that, you know, when you're trying to access 47 parks, you have a pretty good nexus.
Representative, could I ask if there's some kind of an amendment that might be possible, and could I ask the two of you to work on and resolve this grant issue, and we'll hold over a work session until Friday on that. I mean, if this is not an unreasonable request.
Sure. I'd be delighted to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help on that. Did you have a question, Representative Tolman?
No. Okay. We'll have more testimony, I'm assuming.
We will have a work session on.
No. Is there more testimony?
Yeah, I have one more.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Roy, or is it Ray?
Ray.
Ray? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good afternoon,
sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Ray Godfrey. And I'm here, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to speak. And I'm here merely as a witness to past dredging operations. And I've witnessed from the 40s up through the 70s dredging that Commissioner Pope spoke of. And one problem with the past dredging operations is dredge material was not removed, and it subsequently washed back in the river channel. It's back there again to redredge again. And you might notice that on Highway 22 from Capitol Manor to the bridge, all that fill was a result of past dredging operations. And that's the only reason we have navigable waters here right in Salem, because the material was utilized and kept from washing back in the river channel. And I'd like to have suggest that there be no encumbrances for the state or private commercial ventures for use of that material so that it doesn't wash back in the river channel. There are many possible uses by the state. There's many discussions of subsequent future bridge locations, and I suggest that that material be deposited in a place where it could be used and kept from washing back in the river channel so that we don't have it in future operations, future time to redredge again, get it out of the channel. There are many homes that have been built in areas that I've seen flooding, and it will flood again, particularly if not that channel is not deepened and a channel for the water to flow in other than lands where homes are built. So I strongly suggest that you pass this and not have any encumbrances in using that material. All wealth comes from the environment. All of it, every dollar that every one of you have comes from the environment. And we need to use this material, get it out of the river channel, so that we don't have it to contend with and be utilized by commercial venture in the state. So I strongly recommend that you approve this. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Godfrey? Thank you, Mr. Godfrey. Appreciate your testimony. Chair, I'd like to call Jeanette Holman with the Division of State Lands.
What? I think she's trying to hide.
Well, she wanted to hide. She shouldn't have come back in the room. Actually, I think she had covered her absence very well and was prepared to be called back if we wanted her to. Jeanette, you haven't signed up or anything on this this bill, but I'm interested, what are the permitting issues here? And I'm hearing, you know, 2 or 3 years to get permits. Are we going to have that sort of a timeline with DSL? Or tell me about what our problems are with permitting issues.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Jeanette Holman, the Assistant Director for Administration and Finance for the Department of State Lands. There would be two permits required. One would be the state permit, and as you know, we have a 90-day permitting deadline. So unless the applicant asks to extend that period, we are required either to issue or deny a permit within a 90-day period after the application is complete. The Corps of Engineers would also be required to issue a permit. That would be a much harder process, I suspect, or at least much more detailed. They would have to probably do an environmental impact statement. They would have to consult with the services because of the species issues on the river. And that permit, they don't have a timeline, a time deadline. I suspect it would take considerably longer than 90 days just because of those kinds of consultation issues.
So you're telling us you're the friendly agency.
That's
here.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
if I can follow a little bit with this, Jeanette, is one permit going to be adequate for this 100-mile stretch or whatever it is? From DSL. I understand we've got other people to talk to.
Mr. Chair, I will answer that off the cuff because I'm not certain, but if it's all included in a single application and described in that single application, then yes, it would be one permit. But the impact of it would have to be looked at over that whole stretch of the river.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Representative Tillman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Jeanette, could you tell me why dredging is necessary in order to keep the river free for navigation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tillman, I'm probably not the best engineering expert on that, but I do know that as, you know, sand and gravel washes downstream, it does build up on the river. I can read on the river, and I know it is true there are sandbars in places where it's very, very shallow in this stretch of the river. I know you heard testimony from Mr. Probst earlier that this river was regularly dredged by the Corps of Engineers until the early 70s, and since then it has not been totally undredged. There's some spot dredging that occurs, or sandbar scalping that occurs along the river, but it's not by any stretch of the imagination the same kind of dredging that occurred up until that period.
Follow up. Jeanette, am I correct to assume it was after we put in dams, before that the river would run more freely, that the dams have made it possible for the sandbars to develop?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tony, you are beyond my technical knowledge.
Okay.
I can get an answer for you if you'd like. When you come back, I can bring somebody who knows more engineering than I do. I'd like to do that.
I'm just curious, Mr. Chair. We were talking with Representative Barnhart, mentioned that Eugene was going to be seen as a seaport, notwithstanding Willamette Falls. But obviously the river was navigated for many years before it was required to be dredged, so I'm just curious why nowadays it needs to be dredged in order to make it navigable.
I expect the answer to that is multifaceted.
Okay.
But I don't know that we could, because it might have been navigable at one time in the history, that we could make a statement that it would have been navigable at all times in the pre-white man history of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So that would take people with more expertise at least than I.
I guess I
do think your question's an interesting question. I think one of the things that probably is somewhat self-evident, that civilization has altered the landscape of this earth in many ways. The rivers, are certainly part of that, whether it's some of the dams or whether it's mining, logging, manufacturing, farming, or other things that have contributed to that. That I think that's an interesting and good question. I would think the important question is whether this improves our environment, whether it improves the use and utility of the river. We may have to do things in the future that we didn't have to do in the past, and that may just be part of the price we pay for living in the 21st century, where we have all of the modern and nice things that we live with.
True. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Jeanette.
Welcome.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any information you could provide us to Representative Tomei's questions would certainly be appreciated. I don't see anyone else signed up for this. If there's anyone who wishes to speak on this, we certainly would take that testimony. If not, we will be holding this over until Friday and hoping that we have a resolution there that we can then move the bill out with that agreement. Captain, please.
I can clarify for the historical problem.
And for the record, your name, please.
My name is Richard Chesbro. I'm the captain of the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. And part of my job as captain of the Sternwheeler is to try to educate people a little bit about the history and the importance of the riverboats as they played in the early years of Oregon's history. There were actually 55 riverboats that ran between Oregon City and Eugene But there were only two boats that regularly ran to Eugene. And the reason for that was because of the shallow water conditions, especially from Corvallis to Eugene. The two boats that primarily made that run only drew 8 inches of water, believe it or not. One was a boat called the Chester, and the other one was the James P. Clinton. All the other boats that ran the Willamette River throughout the entire riverboat era, which was from 1850 to 1916, all stopped at Albany. Between Albany and Corvallis, there's a lot of rocks, and I mean huge rocks, granite shelves, which is not gravel, that were very dangerous for the boats. And I myself had made that trip only once, and that was in extremely high water. And our vessel only draws 32 inches, and we had some real close calls in that stretch just between Albany and Corvallis. And that's probably the reason why there hasn't been a whole lot of attention south of Corvallis with doing much dredging in the river, because of the amount of rocks that are up in that area. But I hope that answers the question as to what was happening in the early years as far as navigation to Eugene. Just a couple of boats that I found in my research.
Okay. Yep, that's very very interesting, very informative for us, and I appreciate appreciate you coming.
The other thing I thought I might, a little bit off the subject, but I think it ties into this this whole project, is I'm attending a couple of meetings tomorrow and the following day with Representative Darlene Hooley at the federal level, pertaining to the Corps' decision just this week to permanently close the Willamette Falls locks. And they are actually putting $72,000 into their budget to actually decommission the locks. And this is very disturbing to people throughout the Willamette Valley. That essentially is like putting a roadblock in the middle of I-5 and saying, well, sorry, nobody can go to Portland anymore. That effectively puts me out of business. It puts one of the largest sand and gravel operators out of business, which is the Wilsonville sand and gravel people. And the whole reason the Corps of Engineers makes this decision is that there's no longer enough commercial traffic on the river to justify keeping those locks open, even though they've been open since 1873. And I think there's very viable opportunities. There's a lot of companies that have come forward, as Mike Probst has pointed out to me, that have actually responded that they would be interested in once again shipping product by barge downriver to Portland. And of course, any of this would not even be possible if the locks were closed.
Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, this is raising, I think, a whole new issue that I at least didn't hear spoken to earlier. Is it your understanding that we now have materials that are being transported in some other way, by rail or truck, that would be barged to Portland if the locks were kept open and if this project were completed?
Oh, that is correct. The people that we've met with already in the sand and gravel business, the easiest way for them to ship the material downriver would be to start dredging or, you know, scouring the gravel bars from the Newburgh Pool, which is where dredging stops right now, on south. And as they filled up the barges, they would just float them downstream. And that is by far the cheapest way to ship that kind of product. But we're also talking about companies that have other types of products, you know, grains and wheat and hops and metal products. There's a number of companies that have, and other sand and gravel companies, that and that would keep a lot of those big trucks off of the roads.
You read my mind. You read my mind.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. The river is a wonderful commercial potential.
Environmentally, that's the soundest way to move product down the valley.
Well, I suspect the Port of Portland wouldn't object either.
No.
Okay. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3104 for the day, and we're going to carry the work session portion of the posting over until Friday of this week. And then Having closed public hearing on House Bill 3104, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 731. And Senator Quitzett is here, and we'd I don't know. I don't want to have a fight at the, you know. I don't know. I think you're in another committee, so if you would go ahead and Dingfelder will pick up her case on conclusion.
Okay. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsett, Senate District 28. I'm testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 731. As you know, Mr. Chairman, in arid eastern Oregon, water rights are very valuable property rights. They are bought with the land, sold with the land, mortgaged with the land, and taxed with the land. The water rights represent more than 95% of the value of irrigated farmland. To point, in 2001, when the federal government turned off the water to the Klamath Project, Klamath County Commissioner Reggie LeCue reassessed the value of that farmland for that 1 year without water at $21 an acre, down from $3,000 an acre. There are two measures of an irrigation water right. The rate of diversion is the maximum amount that may be diverted at any point in time, as you know. And the duty is the total quantity of water measured in acre feet that may be diverted during an entire irrigation season. In actual practice, rates of diversion are often shared and rotated between water users in order to create more efficient use of water. In fact, the paper water right, the amount of water that may legally be diverted for beneficial use, usually exceeds the historical actual use. Seasonal duty is almost never completely diverted. In Senate testimony, Adam Sussman of the Oregon Water Resources Department, I believe Adam is here, stated that this measure does not authorize the Oregon Water Resources Department to do anything that the agency is not now authorized to do. In fact, existing law, ORS 549.3102, quote, "The owner shall construct and maintain, when required by the commission, suitable measuring devices at such points along the ditch as may be necessary to assist the water master in determining the amount of water that is to be diverted into the ditch from the stream or taken from it by the various users." That is, end of quote, that's the existing law. It would be argued, or could be argued, that Senate Bill 731, if passed into statute, would actually reduce the Oregon Water Resources Department authority from being authorized to require water measuring to only being authorized to ask for voluntary compliance with water measuring requests. However, in my opinion, this is not the purpose of the bill. This bill is more far-reaching. This bill will create the statutory language or the framework for amendments in future sessions that could vastly change how water rights are quantified, allocated, and valued. The obvious first step is to require that all irrigation water rights be measured. From that point, the rest is all downhill sledding, Mr. Chair. Water rights could then be redefined as the quantity historically used rather than the quantity allowed in the water rights paper. The difference would be reallocated for the greater public good, and this would be characterized as the taking of private property that wasn't being used anyway. Water rights would then be further redefined as the amount of water needed for the most efficient use. The difference would be reallocated for the greater public good, using the logic that only the most efficient use is a beneficial use. Water rights could then be further redefined to mean the highest and best use of water being restricted to the most efficient use of water to grow the highest value crop. The difference would be reallocated for the greater public good, using the logic that the highest and best use is the only true beneficial use. Ultimately, a charge could be created for the water diverted to ensure the most economical and efficient use of water to conserve the greatest amount of the public good. Am I? The use of this measure will in fact begin the effort to take private property water rights for the greater public goods without benefit of compensation to the rightful owner. Please do not move this bill forward, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Whitson? Thank you very kindly for your time and testimony and for the interruption. I apologize for going back and forth with you. Thank you. Representative Tomei, would you like to gain trouble?
Okay.
That's all right.
I know.
Yes.
Do you want me to sit up there? Or
That representative is.
Oh, sure. Why not? I don't.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't get to sit with my back, to be honest.
Maybe if I have people in my I can keep the name straight.
Once again, I take it as a compliment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Jackie Dingfelder, House District 45 in Northeast Portland. And I want to thank the chair for holding the public hearing today. I certainly appreciate it. And as you know, this has been an issue that has had discussion for many sessions. I am a chief proponent of this bill, so I wanted to explain a little bit about what the intent was and how it's come to the version that you have in front of you, which is an amended version. It was amended over in the Senate. As you probably know, there's no universal requirement in Oregon for people diverting public water to keep track of what they use, and water measurement is not, nor has it ever been required for the vast majority of water rights holders in the states. In certain specific incidences, the Water Resources Department does require individuals to install measuring devices for water withdrawals or diversions. However, this program is not widespread. And currently, the most recent figures that were provided to me by the Water Resources Department is that 8% of surface and groundwater rights are required to measure their use currently. Now, that does account for about 46% of the total volume of water used in the state. However, that still leaves over 50% of Oregon's water that is unmetered. So why is measuring our water important? And, you know, why have I been working on this issue for many, many years? Well, every water basin in Oregon is currently oversubscribed, as we've heard here in many incidences, and that is for at least 1 month during the year. Some basins are over-appropriated. This is similar, the way I look at it, as someone who keeps writing checks, although their checking account contains $0. And part of it is because we're really not sure how much water we have at any certain time. So this basically, the state of Oregon has actually allocated more water than we have in the public's water account, if you want to look at it that way. It's also an issue of fairness. Some water users are required to measure their water, and others are not. Municipalities are required to measure the water, and the majority of irrigation districts in the state are required as well. And then you probably know that I think it is anyone who's received a permit after 1999, actually the Water Rights Department 5, getting coaching from the back there, since 1995 has been required to measure water. So why do we need this bill? Well, first of all, this bill is very different from the original version. The original version was a mandatory water measurement program. And after discussion with many of the stakeholders, and I will say that I really appreciate the input of many stakeholders who are sitting behind me, the Oregon Farm Bureau, the Oregon Water Congress, Water for Life, Cattlemen's Association, Water Watch, I'm sure I left out a few. We had some very good discussions about the pros and cons of having a mandatory water measurement bill. And what we came to a conclusion, and I wish I could say this was an absolute consensus bill, we got pretty close, but what we did is amended the bill to make it a voluntary cost share program. And again, this is a voluntary non-regulatory program. And what this law does is it provides the department with a way to say to landowners that currently don't measure their water use, we have some money available for you, and if you work with us, we'll implement a cost-share program. And I know that the chair is very familiar, and some of the committee members may be familiar with the program in which we install fish passage or fish screens. We have a program in the state that a landowner is eligible for 75% cost-share. The state would pay 75% if the landowner puts up to 25%. That's available through Measure 66 money. And that's to encourage landowners to do the right things for salmon. And so the intent is that rather than a blanket regulatory approach, this bill, 731A, requires the department to develop and implement a program that would increase water measurement that is voluntary and collaborative. And I really want to emphasize that because we are not out to get anybody in this bill. What we're really trying to do is figure out how we can get more water for all users, and that does include in-stream users, but basically to have a better sense of how much water we're using in the state. And in my mind, the first rule for adequate, or I should say, adequate water supply planning conservation is to know how much you're using in the first place. I mean, how can we put together a water conservation plan if we don't know how much we're using? So this approach is focused on increasing water measurement through voluntary, non-regulatory cost share options, and basically to give the state a clearer sense of how much water is being diverted from waterways and how we can increase water availability for all users. So I'd just like to see if I have any questions that I can answer. One of the things that is very important in this bill is it does require, as you'll see in the last section, the Water Resources Department to report back to the legislature and say, is this working? It's under Section 3 on their progress. Are they reaching out to landowners, letting them know about the availability of funds? Now, there is one caveat. The chair, two sessions ago, Mr. Chair, it was two sessions ago, set up the water measurement fund. Now, that fund currently has $1 in it, and one of the goals of this bill is by putting forth a clear statement from the legislature that saying that we support landowners who are willing to work with the state on a voluntary basis, and we will help fund water measurement. But one of the things we need to do is try to find some actual dollars to put in that fund, and that's something I certainly would plan to do during the interim, because I feel that this is a very important step in moving forward in having a better sense of how much water we're using here in Oregon. So that's an important component of this bill. I would be happy to answer any questions, but wanted to say that I appreciate everybody's worked on it. It had some very good suggestions, and the bill you see in front of you is the work of many different parties, and I'm sure you'll hear from some of them here today.
Thank you. Any questions? Can I go to Representative Dingfeld?
Sure.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you mentioned that some water basins, they are required now to report their usage. Could you talk some about which ones are required and which ones are not?
Actually, Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei, I'd like to defer to the department on that because they can provide much more details. I don't have those okay. figures memorized, but we did discuss it. There are priority basins. A lot of it's based on what the availability is. If they're considered priority basins, then they're focusing their efforts more on that. But as I mentioned, the percentage of water users that are required currently to measure is fairly low. It's only
8%. 8%.
Yeah. But I know Adam Sussman is here, and so is the director. So hopefully they could provide those specific details.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
Thank you. Representative, I know that you mentioned that you have made this a voluntary program, but what's the incentive? If it's cost sharing, but if I don't do the program, it doesn't. See, if I do the program, it's going to cost me some money, but if I don't do the program, it doesn't cost me anything.
Mr.
So where's my incentive to spend the money?
Mr. Chair and Representative Crummell, it's a good question. I think it's for people who want to do the right thing and say, you know, we're willing to cooperate. We're interested in knowing how much we're actually using. In the end, there's an opportunity for users to actually save water, number one, because they have a better sense of how much they're using. Number two, there may be people who really do want to measure, and they don't have access, they don't have the funds. And water measurement is not necessarily inexpensive. You know, it depends on the type of measurement tool, measuring device that you have to install. And so I actually know, as a former watershed coordinator working with a lot of landowners on the ground, I had landowners that were interested in water measurement, but they didn't have the funds to do it. So one of the things is this would be available to landowners who are interested, and they could come to the state and request cost share if we were able to find some funding. So again, we're not forcing anybody. It's not about telling people what to do with their water. It's just knowing how much we have and if there's more water available for all users.
Paula.
So I guess having always lived in a situation where I've had a water meter, mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time understanding if I'm a farmer or a water user for whatever purpose, and my permit says I can draw, you know, 50,000 gallons out of the Willamette River, or, you know, pick a river, I don't care what the name of it is, to irrigate my crops, and it's based on, you know, I've got 50 acres or something. How, if I don't measure it, how am I going to know how much that I've either only used my 50,000 gallons a day, or that I am not gone over? Plus, how does the department know?
Mr. Chair, I was going to ask the department, actually, if they could come up and address this question. And Mr. Chair and Representative Crummell, there are people out there who already have measurement devices, so they do know. It depends on the type of irrigation technique they're using as well. And I probably don't want to speak for the irrigation districts, but they might also be able to talk to you about that. So it really is a question of some people are applying water and don't know exactly how much you're using. Depends on the type of irrigation technique. But I'd also suggest maybe having the department and possibly the irrigation districts come up and talk about it, because part of what the... If you're in an irrigation district, you are required to measure currently. That's my understanding. If you're outside of the district, then that's not necessarily true.
And one last question, Mr. Chair.
Bob.
Thank you. Section 2, beginning at line 25 on page 1, says ORS 536.241, parents, three parents, does not limit the statutory authority of the Water Resources Department to require the installation of water use measuring devices and the reporting of water use. Can you help me understand what that means?
Yeah. Actually, that is some language that was put into the request of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And I don't want to speak for them, so they probably want to come up and talk about that directly. But part of that was concerned about the irrigation districts that are already required to measure. They wanted to make sure that this bill isn't requiring anything different than what they're already doing. So we specifically wanted to have language in there to clarify that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your time and testimony. I would make comment that Representative Dingfelder has been very faithful and very diligent in pursuing this particular issue, and this is a bill that is, I would say, drastically different than other bills that she has brought before the legislative body in relationship to this topic. I do appreciate the very hard work that you've done, Representative, with all of the parties, and your continued efforts and energy in this area. So thank you for the work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking forward to making sure that I answer those questions. Everyone will come up and correct the things that I didn't have right. Thank you.
Mr. Sussman with the Water Resources Department. I think you've already heard some of the questions that the committee has, so in addition to anything else you have, if you would be kind enough to help us with answers to those, too.
For the record, Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department, and maybe I'll just step back and just very quickly answer one question off the bat about under Section 2 on line 25 on the first page. That was, and I think Senator Whitsitt had described that, you know, well, wow, he might be concerned that this somehow even affected the department's ability to use the existing tools that are in statute that they have to require measurement or reporting. And so as this amendment was being drafted, this was something we were very interested in, this provision in Section 2, that we wanted to make it clear that while we're developing this voluntary collaborative cost share program, we still had this other box of regulatory tools that we have and have always had, and we wanted to make sure we preserve them. So that was that. That's the purpose for that provision under Section 2. Yes?
But the section under that you have there in no way puts any prohibition on your expanding that box of tools that you already have. And I think that might be the concern that Mr. Whitsitt might have been interested in.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I understand, and of course, if we wanted to expand that box of regulatory tools, we'd be back here with some sort of legislative request to expand the box of statutory tools that we have.
But with this language, would it be necessary to come back here to expand them?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess that's a very good question. The way I've always understood this is that it would not limit the department's existing statutory authority. And so maybe that would clarify the intent if that were to be modified. That, again, was my understanding of what the point of that provision was about.
Mr. Chair, if I can just clarify, that was the legislative intent. And if it would be more clear to insert the word existing before statutory, I don't think we thought about that when we were drafting it, but that was the intent.
Mm-hmm. That was basically my question, Representative.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, on the same point, if I could, does your existing authority allow you to adopt new tools or expand the application of the ones you have now?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, of course, our commission has rulemaking authority.
I think that's what I'm asking, I guess, yeah.
They do have rulemaking authority. Of course, they would have to have some sort of statutory basis, I guess, for that rule. And so I guess in my mind, unless we had a new statutory tool, I cannot envision the department, the commission, I guess, creating a new administrative rule tool that isn't backed by some statute.
Let me ask it a slightly different way, if I may.
Please,
Mr. Chair. Thank you. You're not using to capacity all of your statutory capacity now, are you?
Very much.
Chair Jensen and Representative Barnhart, we do have various kinds of statutory authority, and I think Senator Whitsitt described that. I mean, we have the authority to require measurement and reporting as part of the issuance of a new permit. We've exercised that authority considerably. We have the authority to require measurement devices when we need them for specific water management activities. That's the statute specifically, I believe, that Senator Whitsitt described. Since the year 2000, we've exercised that authority 300 times. And then we also have statutory authority to require governmental entities, such as municipalities or districts, to measure and report, and there's over 700 of those. So we are using all the statutory authority tools that we have mm-hmm. within the capacity that we have to use them.
Yeah. Thank you.
Does that include special districts and irrigation districts?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to hesitate when you ask the question special districts because that's such a broad term, but they define it as governmental entities, and I do believe it covers a number of the special districts and, of course, the irrigation districts as well, yes.
Okay. So, if help me here. Under the present situation and scene, the only non-measuring groups out there are the individual irrigators?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, they're it wouldn't just be individual irrigators. It could be individuals using water for
beneficial use.
Beneficial uses of many different types.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think in answering Representative Barnhart's questions, I think I've answered Representative Tomei's question about who is measuring and where, and I sort of threw out some numbers that again, since about 1995, we have been using our sort of permitting statutory authority to require measurement on new permits, and there's over 9,000 points of diversion kind of throughout the state, if you will, that are required. There's the 700-plus governmental entities. There's another 945 individual permit holders that need to measure and report through the permitting process.
May I ask a question? So what proportion of the water users are you referring to?
Well, Representative Jensen and Representative Tomei, as Representative Bingfelder described, it's about 8%. 8% of the water right holders. But again, it's about 46% of the water that's been allocated. So we've sort of, as you can say, majored on the major in terms of trying to increase water use measurement.
Thank you.
So, go ahead. Chair Jensen and members of the committee, I think I've pretty much covered by answering your questions the points I wanted to make, and they were three. Number one, which I don't think I've mentioned yet, is water use data is fundamental to the activities of the Water Resources Department. It's very important for our ability to proactively manage the state's water, which is what our mandate is, as well as effectively distribute water for the existing users on a day-to-day basis. That information is extremely important. And we have some information, but we think we can do better. And then my second point was water use measurement is happening. I mean, I don't want anyone to leave this meeting with the impression that we're not measuring water use. We're doing a significant amount of work to measure water use. And in fact, in some surveys that we've done, and I think this is an important point, where we were looking at some points of diversion and whether they were required to measure or not and how things were going, 21% of the points of diversion that we surveyed, which did not have a requirement to measure, those folks were actually measuring their water use. And so I think getting to Representative Crummell's point is I think there's a lot of water users out there that do, in fact, find it in their self-interest to carefully measure their water, to use it as efficiently as possible, because in the end it could be a real economic benefit for them in terms of, things that they do. And I mean, if you're pumping from a deep aquifer, places like that. And then the last point I wanted to make of my three points is that we do support this collaborative, voluntary, cost-share sort of focused approach to improving our capability to have good data for our water management mandate. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, Brad?
Sure. Representative Crummell. Adam, I see that, or at least in my file, I don't have any kind of a report on this. Has there been a fiscal impact statement delivered for this bill?
Chair Jensen and Representative Crummell, in fact, we've done a few. The bill that it was originally drafted had a significant fiscal impact. Our most recent discussions with Legislative Fiscal Office was that this activity could be carried out as the bill is written with the department's existing budget resources.
Yeah, Representative Lee.
I see that. Sandy was just showed me that. But what that means is, so let's assume for a minute that the argument that people make about how our agencies are stretched to the max, our resources are stretched, we don't have any more personnel, we've got, money's tight, so on and so forth. And this bill says that you will utilize available staff and resources to the department to implement the program. Well, assuming that our staff resources are stretched and our money is tight and all of this other stuff that people have been complaining about, would you like to tell me what is going to get undone or not done if you are working to implement this program? Or, I'll just leave the question there.
Representative Jensen, Representative Crummell, I think that's a really good point. And I go back to, you know, if I'm looking at the bill on lines like 12 and 13, for example, where we have been operating under legislative policy to adequately manage the state's water resources, as an example, under current law. And under that current law, we have been engaged in activities to increase the state's capability for water use measurement, and we have staff now that are currently working on these types of activities. And so I don't view it as something that wouldn't get done if this bill were to pass, because these are kinds of activities that we believe are already required of the department under the current mandate to manage the state's waters.
So this will just be, if I work for the water department, this will just, the water resources department, this will just be an added responsibility sort of that falls under other duties as assigned on my job description?
Well, Chair, that is a question for the director.
Well, I don't care who answers it, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, no, I know, but...
Especially because Adam's a short timer now.
Well, go ahead for the record.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Phil Ward, thought Adam was doing a great job, but just to add my my 2 cents in. Some years ago, and Adam, you can give me the date, our commission adopted a strategy relating to this issue. It's called our significant diversion strategy, where we identify the major of the majors in terms of water use and begin to move towards some increased measurement relative to those facilities. We would see this bill as folding into that overall strategy and becoming a part of how we implemented that if you all chose to adopt it. So we would not see it as an additional significant burden to staff, merely a focusing tool to help us focus our activities. The one issue I would note that Representative Dingfelter did note is that we do have an existing fund with $1 in it in the agency to assist people in installing water measurement devices. And I would think long term, for a program of this nature to be effective, we would need to find resources for this fund to assist the landowner community.
Thank you. Bottom line, the representative is you probably can't add duties without adding expense. It may not be an early thing, but somewhere down the line.
Mm-hmm.
It might be. The other side of that, I suppose I would say certainly nobody would, if the state were in the gasoline business, nobody would propose that the state or anyone who was in the gasoline business didn't measure it when it went into the various and sundry places at $3 a gallon or whatever it's becoming. So, and we have noted on many occasions that water is an economic commodity in our state. And, I have no further questions unless the committee has some more. Thank you very much for both of you. Mr. Myers from Water Watch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Doug Myers, representing Water Watch. We're supporting Senate Bill 731 as amended, and I just want to stress that this is not the camel's nose under the tent or any, we're not insinuating that irrigated agriculture is wasting water. To me, water is Oregon's most precious natural resource, and it's really the key to the future with the population we have coming. And in order to manage water, and to me, the Water Resources Department should be the one to manage water, you need to measure it. You need to know how much you're using and where it's going. And this is a very, very small voluntary thing to help people that want to do the right thing. I was in a negotiation yesterday on House Bill 3038, which is this contentious municipal thing we had, and I want to tell you that we reached agreement. And one of my guys said, why would the municipalities want to look on extensions when they don't have to? Why would they want to actually look at a resource issue? What's their motive? And I said, maybe they want to do the right thing. And I think this bill is designed for people who just want to do the right thing. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate your comments. Any questions for Mr. Myers? Thank you very much. And I appreciate your participation in the sometimes difficult work session that you had to go be in. I can't read this one's writing. Oh, Richard Cosensan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Richard Cosensan with Water for Life. And it probably is going to surprise quite a few people, but although we agree, I think, with a lot of the direction that's been discussed, we might disagree with the bill as proposed. What is handed out to you, I think, are pertinent statutory provisions. And the first page was previously referenced by Senator Doug Whitsitt in terms of provisions found at 540.310 sub 2, providing express authority for the commission to require measurement to date. I would also bring your attention to 540.320, provisions dealing with noncompliance with the requirements found at 543.10. Second page included with that packet would be a reference to 547.20, express language dealing with unauthorized use or waste of water. The third, again, the third page referencing 537.211 and was discussed earlier, but specifically, the department currently maintains express authorization to set forth any term, limitation, condition as the department considers appropriate, including but not limited to any applicable condition required under ORS 537289 when issuing a permit. So I think in terms of the statutory provisions, the department and the commission maintain clear and express authority to require measuring to date. I would also bring your attention to current administrative rules found at 690-250-0060, stating in part, water use controlling devices and or measuring devices shall be required when necessary for the regulation or management purposes. All required water use controlling devices and measuring devices shall be approved by the Water Master prior to installation. So in terms of a framework of statutory provisions and administrative rules, I think the authority is currently in existence. Water for Life, I think, as I have indicated earlier, a little bit surprised in terms of the degree of concern associated with this measure. I think we're dealing with perceptions. I think we're dealing with a situation of concern over the precedent-setting nature of this. The individuals who I have heard from are very, very concerned that this is the first step in terms of a mandatory measuring program or down the road some type of fee associated with water use. Doug Myers said very clearly that this is not the camel's nose under the tent. The people I have talked to would believe that that is true. The camel is inside the tent. I would hope that in the future we can get around some of these perceptions. One alternative perhaps would be to take a look at a structure surveying water use in the state of Oregon and find out how many people currently not measuring use would be open and willing to participate in a voluntary measuring program. I think that could be done with very, very little cost, and I think that would give the body a good deal of direction in the future. There has been discussion in terms of irrigated agriculture and individuals required to measure, individuals not required to measure. I think in previous meetings the committee has heard that irrigated agriculture today in the state of Oregon, approximately 50% is located within districts, irrigation districts, and about 50% would be comprised of private individual irrigators located outside those districts. In terms of the requirement, I believe it first came into existence in about 87, water use reporting, and that would include specifically to a previous question, water use reporting in terms of a mandate. A governmental entity would include any state or federal agency, local government, irrigation district, and a water control district formed under Chapter 553. The difference, I think, is that the measuring for a district, generally a district would maintain one point of diversion. The measuring at that point of diversion is fairly simple, as opposed to the measuring requirement of perhaps 20, 100, 200 district patrons inside that district. And I think that is a very, very distinct difference. With that, Mr. Chair, again, I would emphasize that I think in the countryside, from the irrigated agriculture side of the equation, I think you have a lot of very nervous, concerned individuals associated with this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having a little problem following the line of argument, and maybe you can help me with this. The materials you passed out, the front page of it, in which you refer to ORS 540.310 sub 2, that highlighted material appears to me, at least as I reread it half a dozen times, to allow for the commission to require as many measuring devices as it wants along a ditch or at the access point or along the places where water is being diverted out of the ditch. Now, under the current law, is that not correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, I think my point with that is that currently the department and the commission clearly maintain express authority to require measuring.
And there's no limitation on that, is there?
To my knowledge, Mr. Chair, again, and Representative Barnhart, no. The department, I think, has been prudent in terms of identifying management areas in need of further information and requiring measuring. But again, they do indeed maintain that authority.
Well, then I'm getting to the point of my question, I guess, is this bill, as I read it, simply sets up a voluntary program
to increase the water measurement statewide. In a sense, this is certainly less than what the authority of the commission already is. Have I missed that somehow?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, I think you've kind of hit part of the nail right on the head without hitting your thumb. It is not a question of specific individual people throughout the state being required to measure, because I think that is being done, as Mr. Sussman previously indicated. I think the concern very clearly rests with a start of a process through which measuring will be mandated for everyone, reporting will be required, and eventually that would lead possibly down the road to some type of fee or charge associated with water use.
Follow-up, if I may?
Follow-up.
Everything before the eventually is already available or possible in the current law, is it not?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, I believe that is true.
Thank you.
But, Mr. Chair, if I may, I think Representative Barnhart, too, part of the concern is when one begins to look at the measuring devices, the cost associated with those devices is fairly significant. And if it is a mandatory situation, I think then you would increase the degree of anxiety associated with mandatory measuring. Measuring devices can range from a few $100 to $10,000 and $15,000 and $20,000. So it's a very significant potential cost for irrigated agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Mr. Stonebrink.
Mr. Chair, former Representative Jim Welch has expressed that he'd like to testify, so it's up to you, but I thought I would express that. For the record, I'm Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. And I'll try to not repeat everything Richard said here. So, but I think what was brought out in earlier testimony on this bill on the other side was from the Water Resource Department was that this was a clear signal for them to do certain things. It is not a bill that's necessary, as just been pointed out. You don't need this legislation. But this was a clear direction to tell them where to go. And I thought you had some interesting questions on, well, if you tell them to focus here, well, they just change focus. They don't really change personnel. But if you focus here instead of here, you have to take your focus off of someplace else. So it is definitely directing them to head down a certain path. And Representative Dingfelder earlier talked about the work group and mentioned the Oregon Cattlemen Association. And just for the record, I want to make sure that you know that the Oregon Cattlemen Association did not vote for these amendments. And in fact, my staff just a little while ago said there was no vote taken, although we did attend those meetings. Also, it's been brought out, but the cost of water metering basically, I think, will discourage irrigation. You think of an irrigator right now, there's sometimes when they are not using the full amount of their water rights because of the cost of electricity. And there's times when, you know, it's the cost of electricity plus maybe the deer or antelope or something are eating the crop, so you just kind of wonder if it's really worth it. You put this on top of it, it's going to be discouraging even more irrigation use. And, of course, that means reduction in food production, which has some economic effect throughout all the rural communities. Needless to say, this, as you push more and more toward water metering. It is a lot of headaches and paperwork for irrigators. So this bill is absolutely not necessary unless this committee decides that you want to see water metering. If that's where you want it to go, that's where this bill is headed. There's a well-known saying, but if you can control water, you know you can control the land. And if you can control land, you can control people. I would rather that we not focus in that direction. In this year, we have had, you've seen since March, an abundance of rain, of precipitation, even on the east side. I had some of our cattlemen said the irrigation lakes were absolutely dry. There was nothing to be taken from those. Now they're running over. Oh, it's going out the spillway. And it's still raining. What have we done, really, significantly in this state from this legislative body to focus on more off-stream impoundments? Nothing. Nothing, nothing. We don't encourage that. What we want to do is fight over what we have and say we have a limited amount. Well, on these types of years, we should be saving that or getting a larger pot to draw from, a larger piece of pie to divvy up. History has told us that only about 5% of the water, available water, is actually used, taken out of the streams for irrigation. 5%. So let's suppose that we move down the road, we do all this water metering, all this cost and control and headaches, and we can increase that by 10%. That would be a big savings. If you could increase the amount or the efficiency of water availability by 10% because you did water metering, guess what? Instead of 95% of the water rushing off to the ocean, never being used, you'd have 95.1%. I mean, it just isn't worth it. And I'd encourage you not to pass this legislation.
Thank you. Questions for Clint? Mr. Welsh.
Well, I do, but I can wait for Mr. Welsh to get done if Mr. Stonebrink will stay there, because I do have a question for him.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
Chair Jensen and committee members, I am Jim Welsh, representing Oregon State Grange. And we saw this bill come forward, and we're a little bit concerned, as you heard from Senator Whitsett and from Richard Kosasan, who I think did a real nice job explaining to you. Richard has worked a long time, and we would agree with his and certainly with Glenn Stonebrink's testimony here. And to make it very short, we would oppose something like this. We understand that the Water Resource Department already does have the authority to require this in certain instances and situations. And so the Oregon State Grange, having members that are within irrigation districts and outside of irrigation districts, we have had a long-standing good relationship with the Water Resources Department. And working with them when there's concerns over irrigation issues and water supply issues is something that I think they've had a long history. And they have been given statutorily certain statute that is going to help them manage some of this in the future. We know that water is going to create some problems, but this bill, we do not think this time, Mr. Chair and committee members, is needed. And we will stand with that.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier, Glenn, earlier I had posed the question, if a farmer or an irrigator has, you know, they've got a permit for X amount, and however it's measured, whether it's measured in acre feet or cubic feet per second or whatever, gallons per day or however it's measured, but they have a certain amount that their water right is for. Because we've heard the argument earlier today, as well as earlier in the session and in the decade, that that our water is over appropriated, it's over it's over allocated and that sort of thing. How does an irrigator know how much water they're using if they're not metering their diversion, whether it's out of a well or out of the river?
Chair Jensen, Representative Primo, usually what happens, first of all, we're not concerned if they're not using their maximum. Let's just assume our only concern is if they're using too much. And if an irrigator is using too much water from a stream, the first people that are going to be concerned about that would be other irrigators, usually. And we'll get a ditch master whose job is it to say you can turn out so much and you can turn out so much and so on. So history has told them, in a sense, how much they can use as they open the boards. If you're familiar with flood irrigation, where they'll take a board with the plastic that goes over the board, they'll lift one board out and so much water can go down and it'll flood out over the field. And so if someone were to, let's say, go out and remove two boards, immediately that water level is going to drop on the person down below who's maybe going to try to take out one board. And the water isn't here. So the first thing they do is complain. So that's usually the first people you have. You have a ditch master who has control over that and can make them go back and put their boards in and that sort of thing. Those people who pump water, first of all, and I, if you have a certain pump, a pump that's capable of pumping so much water at so many RPMs with certain horsepower electric motor, let's say.
That's right.
And I know when I used to work with USDA, and we'd ask people to prove that you even irrigated your crop because they were trying to claim disaster payments. And you'd be, they'd say, well, yes, I irrigated my crop. Here are my electric bills. And they could show that through their electric bills how much wattage they were using. And so that would relate them to how many hours they've run the pump, and then the pump would tell you how many hours. Its capability would tell you approximately how much water you're putting on. So is it very scientific? You know, could you say it's exactly this many gallons? And no, it's not. But the point I was trying to get to earlier was the cost and the burden, is it worth it for what you will gain? And I don't think it's going to be anywhere close, unless, as been pointed out, unless there is another motive behind water metering. And there is a lot of concern. Our people are very concerned about this.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. This could be for either gentleman or both. I'm still somewhat confused. On line 18 of the bill, it says that this is a voluntary program. So can you give me an example of somebody you represent who might be hurt by this bill?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei. I guess the hurt, if you will be the focusing line 20 that says we want to focus. This is telling the Water Resources Department, this legislation, your voice will be to say, focus on water users that are not currently required to meter water uses.
But that is preempted by being voluntary.
If I may, Mr. Chair, as was pointed out with the line of questioning earlier, they have the authority within the law to require the water metering now.
But my question is, who would be hurt by this?
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Well, let me answer, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei. Let me answer it this way. There's, a dollar, I believe, was mentioned at one time in the cost share program. So if you have a dollar and it's a voluntary cost share program, I don't see how it can be helped much. So what I'm saying is there's another motive behind this. And that's a roundabout way of answering your question, but that's what I feel is happening here.
We're running up against session time here, 3 o'clock session. One of the things that's always, Glenn and Jim and Richard, somewhat concerned me about this issue is there seems to be on the part of some a perception that either people are, I hesitate to use the language, but exploiting the resource, I think many people and your constituents are sensitive to the accusations that have been made in relationship to the possibility. One of the, I would perceive possible benefits of water measuring is the fact that, in my belief, most of the time you'd substantiate that you, in fact, weren't exploiting the resource, that you probably were using less than you might be allocated for. And, of course, I would see that as a possible advantage especially maybe in a low water year, where somebody is downstream or wherever is not getting water, and they're blaming the upstream people for using more than their share. They'd have some sort of documentation, and real documentation. I'm not looking for an answer to this, but I'd listen. Yes. Jim.
Mr. Chair and committee, I think to answer Representative Tomei's question, I think where the grain should come in, and when we look at this, is just, is it really needed? Because today in statute, as we said, Water Resource Department can require this anywhere they see it necessary. And our people are going to comply and work with them. And the two things that we really support and is a appropriate conservation education, and we've been doing that. The department has, they're very good at educating along conservation lines and using irrigation and new and current irrigation techniques and technology, encouraging irrigators to do that. And I know our Water Resource Department is going to continue that. And with the statute that gives them authority, we just don't see the necessity of the bill.
Could I have one more comment quickly?
Yes.
I hesitate to say this, but there's some of our irrigators that tell me why they don't specifically want water metering devices, because they're using too much water. And you say, we knew there was someone out there doing this. What happens is we have a lot of native meadows, native grasses, and those meadows are not perfectly level. They'd have to tear up the native grasses to get them perfectly level so they could flood irrigate. They don't want to do that, which makes sense, environmentally and everything. So they require a larger wall of water. They have to open the gates bigger than you would be allowed to get to those differences in the slight elevation. They're not much, but they're enough. They need a bigger wall of water. Now, what happens is that flood irrigates, but then it runs back into the river further downstream, oftentimes cleaner than it was when it started because of the filtration
system. And cooler.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. And so if you put a water metering device on them, they'd be illegal right off the bat.
Thank you very much. Appreciate a lot of your testimony. We were only on a public hearing on 7:31 today. We'll carry the other the items that we've got left on our agenda, since we didn't move anything today, over to Friday. With that, the committee is adjourned.